If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
This is The Brain, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Yes!
Hello and welcome to the 65th episode of ToonCast, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I am your host, Steve, Joe, and Mike, and today I'm joined once again by Kevin Optimus Solo Thompson. Hello, sir.
Hello.
And we are joined once again, it's been about 50 episodes or so since he's been on this show, Mike the Birdman Dodd from This Week in Geek and all the other shit he does.
What's up, motherfuckers?
Sorry, I'm a little energetic. I just drank. Yeah. Well,
if you'd stop drinking those 5-hour energy drinks 3 at a time.
15 hours is all I need.
Today we are going to be talking about the real Ghostbusters.
Emphasis
so, Mike,
on real.
How have you been?
Emphasis on real.
Yeah. So, Mike, how have you been?
I've been doing okay. I mean, constantly busy as always. The 20-hour work days are starting to catch up with me. So I'm trying to take a little bit of advice out of Men in Black number one, where they say it's a 36-hour work day. You either get used to it or you go insane. So I'm trying to pattern my life after Tommy Lee Jones, a.k.a. Agent K. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good. Going to be taking a little bit of time off in August to attend a wedding or two, as well as the Toronto Fan Expo. And play more video games for reviewaday.ca, because that's how I roll, yo.
When are you actually going to start playing, like, some classic games, like the Mario games or the Zelda games, or, like, good stuff, instead of Dance Dance Revolution ripoffs?
Well, I actually have played several classic NES games, such as River City Ransom, Super Mario Bros. 3, the original Mario Bros., and in fact, I will be doing a Mega Man week sometime in the near future. So don't worry, I do not neglect the NES, the SNES, the Super Nintendo, or sorry, I already said that, the Genesis, and if I can get my Atari 5200 working, we're going to take a real trip back to the past and hopefully bust out my arcade machine once I get it transported into a new cabinet.
Excellent.
So what have you got going on for This Week in Geek? What kind of stuff that you haven't told anybody yet have we got coming up?
Well, I'm working on actually interviewing Garrett Wong, and you might remember him from Star Trek Voyager as Ensign Harry Kim, because I interviewed Robert Picardo from Star Trek a little while ago. I've also sent emails out to Bill Nye, the science guy, who's actually a friend of Bob's, and I actually just got reached out to Catherine Hicks. You might remember her as, I think she was the mother on Seventh Heaven, but she was also the mother in the original Child's Play. And evidently she loves doing podcasts and other sorts of radio bits. And we may even be talking to the weasel, Pauly Shore. As it turns out, my agent, my publicist, actually represents him. So I'm going to see if we can get Pauly Shore on the show next month.
Awesome. And Kevin, what have you been up to?
Well, just working like crazy with BehindTheVoiceActors.com. Well, they've been doing a lot of classic voice compares recently. We got stuff up for, let's see, Winnie the Pooh's up there now, Tigger, Shere Khan, some classics like that, Ka from The Jungle Book. As far as what I've been working on, I just recently put all the voices up with sound clips for the PS1 Beast Wars Transmetals game. And the biggest thing I did this week was another top 10 list, top 10 male voice actors of the 80s, put that list out there. But we have been getting a lot more feedback from actual voice actors. Pat Fraley stopped by the site this past week and had some nice words to say as well.
Wasn't that the guy from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Was that Krang?
Yeah, yep, Krang and Baxter Stockman, and I think played one other role. But he stopped by and made some comments. Actually, it was funny because he made comments on his own voice compare, so that was kind of interesting. It's always nice when you do that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so him and Maurice LaMarche and Sean Schemmel have been the most recent ones that have stopped by, so it's looking good over there.
Schemmel is...
Yeah, we got scared a little bit with Maurice, though, because holy crap.
It's funny because he made a comment on his own voice compare. It was on the Destro voice compare, and he said, you know, I like whatchamacallit better than my take on it, too. And everyone's like, was that actually Maurice LaMarche said that? Like, was that the real one, or is that somebody posing as him? Nope, it's the real one.
Yeah. I have been podcasting, as always. One of the things I did not mention, of course, this episode won't be going up until a week that we actually record it. Because, unfortunately, this is the only time we could get Mike Dodd to be on the show, seeing as how he has to go to weddings that aren't his own, which don't really matter unless it's your own.
I've got a social life. Oh, my God.
You're a geek. You're not allowed to have a social life.
You can't be busy at night. You can't be busy in the evening hours. That's crazy.
The night time is the right time. If you catch that reference, you're awesome.
Yeah. What the hell was I? Where was I going with that?
Something about when this is going to air.
Oh yeah, no. One of the things I didn't mention on the Nerd News thing was we are recording this episode of TuneCast Sunday, July 25th. Yesterday, Saturday, July 24th, I spent from around noon till about 6 o'clock yesterday evening talking with Brian Kilby and the Radio Free Cybertron crew. We did like random SDCC coverage, even though we weren't there. We just like visited all the news sites and spent like 6 hours podcasting straight through.
Wow. I could not sit through a 6 hour podcast.
Me neither.
Well, it
unless you have random naked chicks popping up going, look at my booty. maybe it's a distinct possibility. But unless, Mikey, you got some really quality titties there, I don't know.
Yeah, and even then, it's only going to work for, like, what, 20 minutes out of the 6 hours?
Maybe. Exactly.
Yeah, really. It wasn't an actual podcast episode that they're going to release on their feed for iTunes, but it's on their over at their website, tformers.com and tfradio.net. It was mainly a Ustream audio recording, so you can just listen to it through the website. It's not anything that they were going to release through iTunes, so... but yeah, you know, it was a fun day, you know, talking about the different stuff that we, you know, saw news items about from San Diego Comic-Con. Other than that, not much else is really going on, so I think we're going to go to Kevin with the history lesson on the real Ghostbusters.
Alrighty then, the real Ghostbusters is an American animated television series based on the 84 film, obviously. The series ran from 86 to 1991, was produced by Columbia Pictures and Deke Entertainment, and of course, Coca-Cola had their hands in it as well. The reel was added to the title after a dispute with Filmation and its Ghostbusters properties. The series continues the adventures of paranormal investigators Dr. Peter Venkman, Dr. Egon Spengler, Winston Zeddemore, Dr. Ray Stantz, their secretary Janine, and of course, their mascot Ghost, Slimer. What do you remember about the real Ghostbusters, Mike?
Well,
which Mike?
Yeah, oh, damn exactly.
It. Damn it!
Dodd, you can go first.
Well, I actually totally remember watching this when I was a child, actually. This used to be on a local station up here in Canada known as Global, part of the Can West Media Group. And I used to watch this every morning. I mean, it was syndicated on Saturday mornings as well as weekday mornings for a number of years up here. And it was probably my favorite cartoon of all time, I mean, outside of, like, Ninja Turtles. And I just remember getting all the toys. One of my next-door neighbors, Mark and Arthur, they had the Ghostbusters firehouse. And I just remember just being really excited when my parents would buy me stuff. And I remember one birthday, they actually got me the Proton Pack. But I remember sitting in my living room with my Ghostbuster cereal, with my Ecto-1, in my Ghostbusters pajamas, with my Ghostbusters coloring book, watching this show for years and years to come.
I remember watching this show, and I remember thinking, and this is going back to episode 60 of this podcast where we talked about Garfield. I always thought Bill Murray always did the voice of Garfield, and I know it's not. It originally was Lorenzo Music, and when I heard this and I had seen the original film and then saw this cartoon, I'm thinking, oh, wait, that's Bill Murray. But no, wait, it's actually Lorenzo Music that does that voice. And I don't know. This, to me, is more of the definitive Venkman voice than Bill Murray, actually.
I would be inclined to agree with you, actually.
I have every respect for what Murray did with the films, but as far as like a cartoon type of deal, I prefer Lorenzo Music's voice. I remember watching this off and on. I think my favorite character, and I know I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but as a kid, my favorite character was Slimer, even though he was gross and disgusting, but he was just so funny.
Yeah.
I was always a big fan of Ray, actually.
What about you, Kevin?
Well, as far as which character I liked the most, it was probably a toss-up. I mean, I liked Slimer for his comedic stuff, but I was always connected more with Peter, so I liked Peter as a character. But as far as like my memories of the real Ghostbusters, I remember the thing that always sticks out for me with Ghostbusters is there was two sets of toys that I never had, and one of them was the Ghostbusters toys, and the other was the toys that came out with Dick Tracy. You know, and I was a toy guru. I mean, I had every toy that I could think of for most of the other shows, but I never had a single Ghostbuster or Dick Tracy toy. But I remember one of my sisters, she's a couple years older than me, and one of her friends had both the firehouse, and then they had, like, I can't remember what Dick Tracy's playset was or what came with it or whatever, but he had both of those, and I remember playing with those a lot. And for me, I don't know, I actually think I liked the movies, but I think I actually liked the cartoon better than the movies for some reason.
It's because the cartoon could go places that the movies really couldn't, which I always thought was the appeal of this show. I mean, especially when you had such a powerful scriptwriter like J. Michael Straczynski writing a lot. I think he wrote the syndication episodes, or a good chunk of them. And it's funny just how much this guy would follow me throughout my life, from this show to Babylon 5 to The Amazing Spider-Man, and then, you know, the whole Lovecraftian influence. But I guess we can talk about that later, though. But
yeah, I think you kind of hit on it, though. I think this type of topic, this type of subject is just more believable in cartoon form. And while they did a great job with the movie, it's just something that you can buy into more when you see it in an animated form, in my opinion. Seeing the movie, it's still kind of a stretch for me, even though they do good with the graphics and they do good with stuff. It's just like a little too supernatural for me in like a live action thing. Whereas if you do that in a cartoon, I'm totally on board with it.
See, I had seen the first film probably, I don't know, maybe a year or so after it came out. And
how old were
I
you?
Was 4 or 5.
Okay, fair enough.
I was 3 when it came out, so.
Yeah, Kevin's young. Actually, both of y'all are young. I'm old. Anyway, I had seen it like, I don't know, 85, 86, somewhere around there. It was like 2 years after it came out. And then I had seen this cartoon, and I'm thinking, wow, I kind of wish they had Rick Moranis as the cartoon voice for Lewis, because Roger Bumpus just doesn't do it any...
Bumpass.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that he sucked, but yeah, he definitely wasn't any Rick Moranis. But let's not forget, he was doing Honey, I Blew Up the Kids or whatever stupid thing God. He was doing way back in the day. Man, we need to do an M-Wire about those movies. Those movies were fucking hardcore. But
what, Ghostbusters?
Honey, no. I Shrunk the Kid and Honey, I Blew Up the Kid and Honey, I Inhaled the Kid or whatever else it is.
Oh, Honey, I Shrunk the Kid? Yeah. Those will be eventually down the line for M-Wire, probably.
Hells yes.
Yeah,
I never noticed that there was more than one. When I was a kid, I never realized that. I mean, it's kind of getting ahead here, but moving into the characters a little bit. But I never realized that there was multiple voices for all these different characters when I was a kid. That's for sure.
I did notice.
With the exception of one.
Yeah, which was always Egon, a.k.a. Moe. one of the things that... Well, and Frank, I mean, because he did Ray and Slimer for the entire run of the series. I did notice when they changed Lorenzo Music to Dave Coulier. I just remember watching it one Saturday morning. I'm like, hey, what the fuck, man? This doesn't sound
right.
And I think I actually said that out loud, and my parents just kind of looked at me.
I love Dave Coulier, though.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's a – man, I should try and interview him for Twig. He'd be kind of fun. But, when the voice cast changed – the chemistry of the show changed, and actually it's funny, if you look at the Time Life complete box set for the series, they actually kind of talk about this. They don't talk with like Dave Coulier, but they do talk to Mo, Maurice LaMarche, and he's just saying how the chemistry changed, and J. Michael Straczynski changed too, because he said when like he was writing the show, he always had the hardest time writing Peter, because he had this very dry kind of lazy kind of wit to him. He always pictured Lorenzo Music's voice doing it, because Lorenzo was just playing himself when he did this show, more or less. And I just remember when they changed the voice cast, the writing changed, and then when the show got into Slimer and the real Ghostbusters, well, I'm going to save that rant for later.
But really, a lot of the voice actors on this were doing just their straight voices. This wasn't something where people were going all out and crazy. I mean, Frank Welker, that's his Fred Jones voice. That's his voice as Ray Stantz, basically. You know, Lorenzo Music, like you said, that's his voice, basically, for Peter Venkman. It wasn't a show where people were, you know, creating these crazy voices, obviously, except for Slimer. So, I mean...
Well, Slimer is pretty much Welker's, like, animal speaking role type of deal thing. I mean, it's him doing sound effects.
I'm going to go back and watch, though, an episode from season one and an episode from the last season to see the difference in Janine, because I never realized that was different people when I was a kid.
I'm very surprised to see, and again, I hadn't really paid much attention to the voice actors outside of the ones that we've kind of already talked about, but I'm shocked as hell to see Arsenio Hall listed as the voice for Winston.
And you know what's fucked up? Arsenio Hall beat out Ernie Hudson for the role of Winston. Ernie Hudson is Winston. And they're like, no, you sound too black. We can't have that.
Like, that doesn't work.
I know, it was just so weird, but I guess Arsenio Hall was like this up-and-coming comedian, and he was just, you know, just kind of getting his like kind of feet wet, and I was really happy with his voice in the first couple seasons. I mean, not that Buster Jones did a bad job, just Arsenio Hall, when I think of Winston, it's a tie between Ernie Hudson and Arsenio. Man, what the hell is Arsenio Hall doing these days, Dad?
Nothing, probably.
Same thing MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice are.
They're all hanging at Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew.
That's right.
I'm just throwing you guys off, aren't I?
No, but it's just all these 80s references are just compounding into my head, and it's just glorious. awful thoughts.
That's glorious.
You got to raise the roof with Arsenio Hall and go woof, 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 and raise your fist in the air.
Throw your hands in the air.
That's right. That's a little bit of a Weird Al reference, if you guys get that.
Yeah.
Obscure.
We're going everywhere.
Yeah, we are going everywhere, and we're going into the behind-the-scenes segment. Did you guys know that a short pilot episode was produced but never aired in full?
I actually did, and if you actually have the Timeliner, or sorry, the Time Life collection for this box set, they actually have it on there. You can just see how the character designs actually evolved from before. I mean, they didn't have the original color-coded jumpsuits. They just had the typical Ghostbuster uniform, and looking at Egon and Peter, those are the two biggest differences you can actually see from the final version. But it was really cool, and actually they also have a visual commentary that plays along with the original 4 minute pilot, which is tremendously cool. And then once they showed this and the whole kind of network picked it up, they had to go back and do some like kind of character design, because I had to change what Peter looked like to look a little bit more like Bill Murray, but at the same time they couldn't because the actors didn't want their likenesses in the show, but they had to be recognizable enough that you knew that's Egon, that's Ray, etc., etc. So it was kind of cool just how they kind of did a lot of the pre-production on the show, and a lot of the original artwork is, it's just so radical. I can't remember the artist's name, but I remember there's this one picture, and this guy, and it was the original pitch artwork, and it shows the four Ghostbusters staring down this little demon who's like the side, who's like comes up to the guy's knees, and it's just all them pointing the proton past this little innocent demon creature, and that was kind of what snowballed into the series getting made later.
I think it was odd that they went the lengths that they did to try to make it not seem like the movie. You know, most of these cartoons that are made, you know, based on a live action movie, you know, they do everything they can to copy everything about it. And, you know, from not letting Ernie Hudson have, you know, being the only actor from the films who auditioned, not giving him a part, to telling, you know, like Maurice LaMarche not to impersonate Harold Ramis, to, you know, all this stuff. Like, it seems like they went as far as they could to try to make it as different or as unique as they could. And that just seems kind of odd to me at the, I mean, it worked, but it just seems like that was an odd choice for them, to try to stray away from what the live action film was.
Yeah, and see, that's funny, because they didn't really stray too far. I mean, you've got Ray Parker Jr.'s theme as the theme song. You've got the same kind of title sequence with the whole State Puff in the no smoking sign thing there.
Right.
And then, you know, there's a note in here that says, LaMarche also noted that Bill Murray complained that Lorenzo Music's voice of Peter Venkman sounded more like Garfield. Well, hello, he is Garfield. Duh.
It seems like Bill Murray wanted it to be exactly like him, but then the...
Yeah, well, if that's the case, Bill Murray, you should have auditioned for the role.
I don't think they would have given it. It seems like they didn't want anyone to be exactly... I mean, as much as they have everything like the movie, it seems like when it came to those main characters, they didn't want the voice actors or the, you know, everything being an impersonation or a, you know, a mimic of the movie characters, which I don't see what harm that would have done. You know, like Mike was saying, what harm would it have done if Ernie Hudson had gotten that role?
Yeah, and it says in here also that, you know, although some of the concepts were tinkered with, the finalized show still features a lot of the tie-ins from the films. So why did they go ahead and try to make it completely unlike the films, and yet the final product was pretty much an animated series of the films?
See, and the reason I think that is because the writer, J. Michael Straczynski, I think he wanted to create his own universe within the film's context. And one of the things he says during the interviews is he wanted to find the perfect blend of horror and comedy. And I really think he accomplished that, because if you look at the shows that went into syndication, like after the original kind of network shows, the original 78 or something like that, you just see a whole lot of different themes here. I mean, like, they're dealing with the Necronomicon, they're dealing with possession, aliens at one point, the boogeyman, and stuff like that. And it's just, it's really cool that the fact that they got a chance to explore this world, and I'm really glad they strayed away from the films. I mean, you kind of get hints of it in Ghostbusters 2, where Ray runs the occult bookshop, and you hear him mention things like Tobin's spirit guy, but he also mentions a few other occult books. And in this one, they deal with just more mature themes. And I think the film universe and the cartoon universe are two separate entities. And I'm glad that it's like that, just because you can do so much more within the context of an animated show that was aimed not at just children, but adults too. And that's why this show rode so high in ratings for so long, is because adults could really get into it. There's an episode in one of the later seasons where they deal with Cthulhu from H.P. Lovecraft, and they deal directly with the Necronomicon, which they couldn't use that name because execs at ABC were like, you can't mention that book. It's real. And they're like, no, no, it's not. No, it's real. Why? I've got a copy. Really? Show me. And J. Michael, and they're like, so thank you, Sam Raimi and H.P. Lovecraft. But like I said, there's so much more that could have been done here.
But I think that
I do agree with what you're saying. However, I have to point out in the listing writing credits here for J. Michael Straczynski, he only wrote 21 out of 140 episodes. I mean, Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis wrote all 141 episodes for the most part. So how can you expect someone to not make it like the films when you have two of the films' stars writing the series?
Well, I think J. Michael had a very big – I think he was like – the story editor or something like that at like one point where like everything had to go through them. But I don't know, like it's weird just to think that there could have been a lot that just the fact that Dan Aykroyd and Ramis did write some stuff here and yet the series was toned down in certain places. I always found that kind of interesting.
Yeah. But I think one reason why I like the show as much as I did was kind of what you pointed on, because it was a more mature feel to a cartoon, and it hit me at the right time. I mean, not everyone obviously would have been the same age, but for me, it was the time where I started to get into more mature subjects, because, you know, being 7 or 8 compared to being 5 or 6 when, you know, that you just want to watch your, you know, your goody two shoe cartoons or whatever. So, I mean, I think that was, not only did it hit adults well, but I think it hit a good group of children as they were getting to the age where they were wanting more mature subject matter as well.
Yeah, totally. I and the fact when things changed kind of later on, I mean, after the series changed to be Slimer in the real Ghostbusters, the ratings just bottomed right out. And I think J. Michael Straczynski, I think he came back for a couple episodes later on saying, you know what, if you're going to invite me back, then I'm going to do it the way that I want to do. Because a lot of ABC execs, I think, were saying, well, kids want to be in the show more. I mean, they want to pretend. And they're like, and J. Michael was saying, so where's your evidence? Where's your data on this? Well, you see, and you know, they just kind of trail off. Or they'd say, can you make Janine more of a nurturing mother character? She shouldn't be picking on the boys. And that's when things happened, because when Janine got changed in the show, you noticed there was a distinct different feel to that. And I hate
Slimer grew a tail.
Yeah, and Professor Dweeb, first off, fuck that guy. They changed so much here that you could tell the series was a different creature. And then that kind of led into, I don't know, just as the series wore on, you could just see animation was starting to change. You couldn't get away with the stuff that you could in the 80s. I mean, the 80s was all about cutesy cartoons that were meant to sell toys. Ghostbusters was ahead of its time in the fact that it did deal with more mature subject matter. Not necessarily a continuing story arc, so to speak, because like you would see that in like kind of later animations from Fox, specifically Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four, et cetera, et cetera. And when Ghostbusters started to cater to what the execs wanted, that's when the series went right down the shitter.
I think it's an example of something that was at its peak in its initial season, and every season after that, it got gradually worse until it was basically killed itself.
A shadow. Yeah, exactly. It was a shadow of its former self by the time the last couple came around. And in fact, there are some episodes that weren't even aired.
Right.
I mean, like, it got killed pretty quickly. I mean, I think there was like 7 or 8 episodes unaired. If I'm reading the booklet that comes with the box set right, it looks like there's about 7 or 8 of them that just weren't aired. And like, for a show like Ghostbusters to fall off, really? Because this would have been right after Ghostbusters 2 came out. This should have been riding significant hype.
It doesn't make really a lot of sense either, because the first season was the one that had the best ratings, and or at least I don't have any evidence of that in front of me, but that's what I'm understanding. And the second season immediately is when they start changing things. So, because, you know, second season's when Slimer gets a tail. That's when they change Janine's look. That's when they change, you know, they start to fiddle with the voice actors. You know, third season, Slimer comes in real big time. That's also the last season that J. Michael was involved. So it seems like I don't quite understand why such immediate changes were made when it seems like the show was a hit during the first season.
Because if something... So I'm sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it seems like a typical if it's not broke, why fix it type thing.
It's kind of like with like every show, if it's successful, I'm pretty sure a coven of witches comes together and thinks, how can we fuck this up?
Exactly.
It's just a theory. But
we've seen so many examples of it. It must be true.
Yeah. Do we have any other notes on the behind the scenes of the production stuff you guys want to bring up?
I guess my final thing with the production of it is just the fact there seemed to be a lot of politics at play there for a long time. And I think you could actually hear it come through some of the, like, I don't know. It just seemed as the series went on, like the actors started to have less and less fun with it. That's what it came across to me as. I mean, just watching the documentary on this, things just didn't seem the same. And right near the end of its run, I'm pretty sure everyone was just getting ready to move on.
It just seems like there was a lot of stuff going on, like you're saying, behind the scenes, because nothing else can explain the weird decisions that were being made by the powers that be as far as this show goes. And it just, there's the stuff that they decided with voice actors, with characters, with different influences, et cetera, just so much stuff doesn't make sense that there had to be a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, there was that whole dispute with Filmation, because Filmation had created a series or was re-releasing a series called Filmation's Ghostbusters. And that's why that this show is called The Real Ghostbusters, because they had to actually add real to the name in order to not piss off the Filmation people.
We're not going to piss you off, but we're going to call ours The Real Ghostbusters.
Well, how it kind of worked out is during filming, they didn't have a name set for the actual movie. And then they were filming the Ghostbusters scene where they're outside of the Gozer building. And they're all yelling, they're yelling, Ghostbreakers, Ghostbreakers. And they're like, no. All right, guys, try yelling Ghostbusters. And it worked. So someone had to call legal and say, you need to make this fucking happen right now. I don't care what kind of money you have to throw at it. So the movie got titled Ghostbusters. But when it came down to the animation thing, it became a whole legal mess. And I think there was some kind of a settlement. But they said, fine, you can use Ghostbusters, but you have to do something else different with it. So that's why it is The Real Ghostbusters, is because of that. And not to say that the Filmation series wasn't entertaining for what it was, if somewhat fucking strange. I mean, a talking gorilla fighting a robot zombie skeleton thing. But and primeval. It was just, I don't know. I'm glad they did call it The Real Ghostbusters, because I think it screams 80s nostalgia at you. There's just something about that.
It seems to be like one of those things that Filmation had to look back at in retrospect and be like, we should have just let them call them Ghostbusters, because now they're calling them Real Ghostbusters, which even makes it sound better.
Exactly. It makes them seem like pussies.
The problem, honestly, it's more of a generational gap, because the Filmation series was done in the 70s, and then they were going to re-release it in the 80s as after the movie came out. And then this whole cartoon, this series here is what
they should have been
came
ones,
up with.
They should have been the ones getting sued, because they were the ones trying to capitalize on the damn movies.
Yeah, true. And with that, we're going to move into the actual show. The series follows the continuing adventures of the Ghostbusters, Secretary Janine, Accountant Lewis, and their mascot Slimer as they chase capture rogue spirits around New York and across other areas of the world. So basically, they are ghost hunters looking for Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, they weren't always confined to New York, which I always thought was like kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
This is the cartoon version of the Ghost Whisperer. No.
Never make that comparison again.
No, but anytime I can get a Jennifer Love Hewitt bit in there, I'm going to do it.
I just want to see her boobs, just saying. But you're right. It was very more or less, let's wander the world busting ghosts. And one of the things that I did notice about this series is think about how much they never really talked about death. Because, all right, I mean, the literal definition of a ghost, it's a spirit of a person or something that used to exist, right? Notice how they almost never encountered humanoid ghosts.
Right.
I mean, true humanoid ghosts. And I always found that very interesting. I mean, looking at the philosophy of the series. And if you even talk to Dan Aykroyd about this movie and series today, He's an interesting fellow, to say the very least, when it comes to some of his theories and the applications of his stuff. But yeah, I mean, they would go to haunted castles, they'd go into the sewers and fight monsters, and then it just seems like they dealt with less ghosts as the series went on. They were always dealing with monsters, and I remember specifically one episode where they actually brought back the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, but he was no longer an avatar of Gozer. He was his own being, I guess, because he was held within the containment unit, and he helped Slimer get out, and there's all those creatures in there. I mean, what was the name of the Halloween bad guy with the friggin' pumpkin head?
Something Stein.
Pumpkinstein?
No, it wasn't that. Shoot. That's going to drive me nuts now. But
way to do our research, guys.
Frank Welker did the voice for it, though.
Oh, he's the voice of everything. I'm pretty sure if the human race is somehow wiped from existence and aliens find technology, they're going to assume we all sound like Frank Welker.
Yeah, exactly.
He is the voice of nature.
I think that's one thing though that they had to be careful of. We're talking about real ghosts or humanoid ghosts or stuff like that. I think with just given the time period and the subject matter, I think they're wary of the fact of going too far with it and having the parental units go crazy on them. It was a different time. Like nowadays, if you had this type of thing in the 2000s, everyone's okay with all that type of stuff. You know, we have ghost shows on the TV all over the place. But the 80s was a much different time, and I just don't think it was as accepted to have cartoon go make it seem too real for the kids.
And that's just. And yet kids seem to take the show with like a grain of salt. It's like they understood these were creatures and they were different, that there were real ghosts out there, because even the very name implies death when you think about it. But you're totally right, though. I mean, this show today would be like nothing. I mean, you could show this on Saturday morning, no problem. And back then, I can only imagine.
It'd be an improvement of what they're showing now on Saturday morning.
Oh, God, don't even get me started. I would like to see this show revived in some form, because Extreme Ghostbusters, as far as I'm concerned, never happened. In fact, what am I talking about? I there's just so much I think could have been done with the series, and I think they did a lot of really good things. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, this is a 140-plus episode legacy to our childhood. But yeah. To me, it always felt like it was cut short, like the show died before its time.
Yeah.
Well, it did run, seven seasons?
Yeah, seven seasons, but it seems like there was really more like one season, and then it was like half-ass effort.
Yeah.
Samhain is the pumpkin guy.
That's it, yeah. And yet you would go into other shows like Ninja Turtles, that would run for 9 or 10 seasons, and a season would quote-unquote be like 10 episodes. And I'm thinking, what the flying fuck? With the Ghostbusters, it was always consistent quality. I mean, I felt animation-wise, the show never slacked off, but storylines would be up and down, and things would get changed in post, and I don't know, like, it's weird, though. There's one story that was being related by one of the producers, and he was saying how things would get lost in translation from Korea to here. J. Michael wrote on a script, "Ghostbusters run out of room hauling ass," and that meant they're supposed to run out of the room, like, really friggin' fast. Yet, in Korea, when they animated it, they ran out of the room holding their butts. So there's just really weird things like that, which I think I wouldn't say led to the downfall of the show, but you could definitely tell there was a little bit of a disconnect. And it's kind of funny, though, because J. Michael would sometimes sit in on meetings with the voice actors and in voice sessions in case they needed to learn how to pronounce things or know what the significance was. In fact, when I interviewed Maurice LaMarche myself with David Double D Dennis a couple of years ago, I remember the reason Mo could do so well in Egon's role is the fact that his father was a pharmacist. So he was used to pronouncing these ridiculously long names. And it just seems to me after he left the show that it didn't quite feel right.
But see, he never left the show. Maurice and Frank are the only two people that are on the entire show, 140 episodes.
Mike, that's what I mean. I mean, when people like, yeah, when like J. Michael left, you lost a lot of the really big supernatural influences and the more.
Yeah.
Well, I think what you lost is you lost someone that had a passion for what was going on.
Well, yeah, and as much as I'm S-ing J. Michael's D here, I mean, there were other good writers on the show, and you dealt with some really cool episodes. I mean, one of the big ones, one of my favorites, and it's one that everybody talks about, is one called Citizen Ghost, which explains what happened after the Ghostbusters movie. And in fact, even in later seasons, they do make references to Ghostbusters 2. But I don't think they ever had the slime throwers, did they? I'm not sure.
I don't remember that. I do remember a lot of Ghostbusters 2 references, but I don't remember the slime throwers. But you did mention that, you know, there were other writers. We kind of skimmed by that. But, you know, Michael Reeves and Lawrence DiTillo, and I mean, there was a lot of...
You mean Larry DiTillo, not Lawrence DiTillo.
Well, he was credited as Lawrence sometimes, too. In the, as far as IMDb goes, sometimes he's...
Oh, yeah, I don't like... Yeah, but, yeah.
But Michael Reeves, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff done by him. You know, there was quite a few different writers. But I guess my main point was it seemed like, as far as from what Mike's saying, that, you know, J. Michael was the one that had the passion, and it seems like a lot of other people were just doing it to do it, or, you know, doing it to make money or pass the buck. And you got to have someone that's going to have a passion if you want it to be successful.
Yeah, I agree. So do we have anything else we want to say about the actual show or any other episodes we want to bring up?
It is totally worth picking up. I mean, I think the show in some regards holds up really well even today, just because it's such an iconic show that dealt with a lot of themes that wouldn't even get dealt with until, I guess, the show Inhumanoids. And that's just because it dealt with really weird, spooky shit. But yeah, I mean, other than the fact the actual show, it's very entertaining. Dave Coulier does a passable job. He's no Lorenzo Music, but he does make the role his own. Maurice LaMarche, obviously fantastic. Frank Welker, a.k.a. the voice of nature, never puts in a shitty performance at all. So my overall thoughts on the show was freaking fantastic.
All right. And now we are going to hear the original Ray Parker Jr.'s Ghostbusters. It is now time for the music segment, and yeah, that original song, the theme song to this cartoon is awesome because it's kind of a takeoff of the original, it's not really a remix, but it's the original song in cartoon form, but that original song by Ray Parker Jr. from the film was awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, you hear the first 3 seconds or even just a bar of that song, you know exactly what that song is. And I don't know, I mean, it's kind of funny because I know there was a big musical tie-up when it came to Ray Parker Jr. and the Ghostbusters franchise for a long time, which is why he didn't come back for the second one, or so I've heard. But one of the things I liked about the real Ghostbusters is they just had these really catchy incidental music stings. And what I mean by that is, and maybe Kevin, you might remember this a little bit more clearly than Mike, do you remember whenever they'd show an exterior shot and you just hear that synthetic organ and it'd be very happy, kind of catchy, that this series just had a lot of really catchy stings that I thought, and even Slimer had his own theme.
You made a comparison earlier to a show that was going on at the same time, basically, and we've talked about it a couple times, but it's kind of like Turtles in that respect. You know, Turtles had a lot of different, like, character type themes or a little different music when they did like a panoramic, like landscape view type thing. You know, both of these shows did very well at not just having a great theme song, but sporadically putting not just different versions of the theme song, but different music altogether throughout the show, you know, for different types of shots. I think they both did an excellent job at that.
And the other thing is, a lot of like really classic cartoons and a lot of current cartoons, well, not really current, but like between the 80s and the 90s, they would always put in the theme song whenever the good guys or the heroes or the villains showed up, like X-Men, the X-Men 92 cartoon. Every time that jet came out of the mansion, you would hear like the first two or three beats of the instrumentals of that theme song. Same thing here. Whenever the Ghostbusters would show up or come onto a scene, you would hear bits and pieces of the Ray Parker Jr. music.
Which I always thought was something that a lot of cartoons today don't really use music as effectively as they could, because half of any visual medium is music. It's audio. In fact, turn off the visuals to a horror movie and just listen to the sound design. And I think a lot of cartoons from the 80s really kind of understood the fact that, hey, we have to use music in the right way. And I think it just really punctuated well with a lot of 80s cartoons, just using incidental stings like that. And like I say, even just the stock music for this show, it was pretty awesome.
I think you almost implied that there's something that cartoons today do effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I find sound design is one of those things that isn't really looked at as closely, and maybe that's because I come from an audio background. But the next time you watch a TV show or watch a cartoon, just listen.
And that's something too. Like they talk about that on the G.I. Joe and the Transformers Matrix sets, when they talk about the voice actors, talking about, you know, going through and watching a show without the sound, or, you know, either just watching it or just listening to it and seeing the differences. And it's a great experiment to do. You know, one time mute it and watch it without the sound, and then one time turn away and listen to it without watching it, and see how valuable the sound is over the animation, over anything that's visual. It's incredible how much you can watch a whole show almost without seeing it, just by listening to it, but you can't watch it even by looking at it without hearing it.
Yeah.
And I think sound design is a lost art when it comes to network television, or specifically when it comes to animation. It's changed, and I'm not sure I like the way that it's going. It's just like animation has gotten lazy. And I'm not saying these shows are like all Academy Award winning sound designs.
But I think a lot of the cartoons these days, I think a lot of the cartoons today would have decent stories and they're decent writing, but the drawing and the sound and all that just seems, like you said, it's lazy.
Yeah, there just isn't as much there as there should be.
Right.
And that's really unfortunate. But I mean, I guess to get back to the music here, one of the things I think the real Ghostbusters, the Ghostbusters franchise did, is that the soundtracks themselves, I mean, I'm talking about the film soundtracks here, both of them were amazing, and Ghostbusters 2 is a really underappreciated soundtrack. I mean,
Ghostbusters 2 is a really underappreciated film.
I wouldn't go that far.
I loved the second one.
See, the thing I love about the second one was the music. I mean, this is back before Bobby Brown was a coke head wife beater, but he also had New Edition on there. You had not John Lennon, Elton John. You had Glenn Frey, you had Dougie Doug on there, you had
Arsenio Hall make an appearance.
Yeah, what's his name? Run DMC.
Yeah.
And like I said, just go back and listen to the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack, because it's friggin' fantastic. And there's one song I love called We're Back, which is just a fantastic Bobby Brown track. But I don't know, I would have liked to, like, after Ghostbusters 2, I mean, because rap was the hip thing in the 1990s, it would have been kind of fun if they tried a little bit, like maybe experiment with the end credits theme, maybe play with that and do a rap or something with it. But that maybe consider blasphemy.
Ninja, go.
Okay, no, let's never talk about that bastard again. but yeah,
that's two Vanilla Ice references in one episode. Wow.
All right, I know you look up to Kevin, me. Doing Cold as Ice. The next M-Wire. just saying. But yeah, like, like I said, man, I really wish a lot of shows would use more soundtracks, I mean, from films and movies. And here's a really good example of it. I mean, there's a show by Deke Entertainment called Kid Video, and I guess that might have been produced in association with MTV back in its infancy, way back when it didn't suck. And you'd have popular songs inserted in the television shows. And in Captain and the Game Master, you'd have the same thing. You had Bob Seger's Shakedown in one episode where it was Mega Trouble in Megaland. And you would just get really cool things. And the Ghostbusters didn't do that, but they had their own popular song built in, which they could use to affect whenever they wanted to, which I thought was cool. I mean, this show, but then again, I guess if you did that, you might date the show a little too much. I mean, if you heard Sunglasses at Night, you'd know exactly when this show was like, hey, that was top of the charts back in 1986, sort of thing. But I don't know. I mean, I think, I guess my final thoughts on this is the real Ghostbusters did a lot of good things with music. Incidentally, sound design was fantastic on this show. Voice acting, we've already talked. We've already basically given these guys complete oral because how awesome they are. But there wasn't any real negative thing to say about this show sound-wise.
Yeah. Moving into the legacy segment, it's just much like Roger Ebert has become a running joke over on MWire Movie Week in Review, the IGN Top 100 Best Animated TV Shows has become a running joke. And in Kevin hates them people over there. In January 2009, IGN named The Real Ghostbusters the 22nd best show in the Top 100 Best Animated TV Shows.
No comment.
Well, what are their top five?
You want to know what their whole list is? Their whole list is Adult Swim or primetime shows. If you're the Simpsons, Family Guy, Futurama, all that stuff, which is nothing wrong with that, but that's their whole list. I mean, what was the one that didn't – did Yogi Bear not even make the top 100?
Yeah, it didn't make it.
That's kind of surprising, actually.
Yogi didn't make it. Huckleberry Hound didn't. There was a bunch of people. I'll see if I can find the link, and I'll email it to you, Mike.
I think Garfield made it.
No, I don't think so either.
They're anti-animal.
Yeah.
They're anti-80s.
There's two spinoffs. Of course, at the start of the third season, it became Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters.
Happened.
Oh, all right. And then there was the true spinoff, which we will most likely do some sort of discussion about it in maybe another podcast, maybe in a future podcast for Tooncast here, the Extreme Ghostbusters.
Never happened also.
Mike, go ahead and give your rage.
This show, okay, a Ghostbuster in a wheelchair. Okay, first off, I have friends who are mentally and physically disabled, and I'm all for that. And I really think this show was a direct response to the fucking Burger King kid in the wheelchair. And just... It was just bad. I mean, this show, there was nothing memorable about it. Hell, you want to know how bad this show is? I used to come from a town called Owen Sound. This is a very small town up in northern Ontario, like 20,000 people. I swear to bloody God, there were still Extreme Ghostbusters toys on the shelves up until 2006. This is how fucking batshit terrible this show was. And I think Egon and Ray were the only ones left. I can't even remember.
Just Egon, I think.
Oh my God. What the
that's,
fuck?
That's the point though. Like if you're in the boardroom, not that they were in a boardroom, but if you're out here, you're at the table, you're pitching this idea, and you say, I have this idea, we're gonna make a spinoff of the Ghostbusters, and Egon is gonna be the only character we bring back. Shouldn't you just be laughed out of the room?
Yes. Yes, you should.
Fucking bad idea.
Yeah.
They didn't even offer any real explanation for it.
Yeah, that's what kind of really sucked about it.
And
due to a lack of supernatural activity is why they disbanded.
Oh, like, oh, yeah, things are really boring now because, you know, hell doesn't exist.
So tell me, when the supernatural activity picks back up, wouldn't they all come back together? Come on.
Why would you recruit children to fight death-dealing monsters? I'm sorry. Why are you giving a kid who is a social fucking misfit an unlicensed nuclear accelerator? Here, kid who could potentially have a mental deficiency down the road. Here, please take something that could blow up the city, you fucking
idiot. I think it's a conflict
of
interest, too. You can't have your teacher recruiting four students to work as a Ghostbuster team. You're going to give those students preferential treatment in the classroom.
Hey, you're right.
Says the teacher that gives the kids preferential treatment in the classroom. Moving on. because we have to kind of wrap this up. Moving on May 27th, 2008, Time Life announced that they would be responsible for a complete series release on DVD in the fall of 2008. That July, they allowed fans the chance to vote between two variations of Outer Box for the set, one designed to look like the main character's firehouse headquarters and the other all black with different images on each side. Both featured lenticular printing, the firehouse version to show the Ecto-1 and the black version to have oozing slime. And I believe, thank God, the firehouse version won. Released on November 15th, 2008, the set spans 25 discs containing all 147 episodes of the series. Later changed to the November 25th firehouse case winning the fan voting, which holds five steelbook volumes. The company then began releasing the individual volumes, with the first released March 31st, 2009. Now, I did not get a chance to pick this up yet. I've got to get this set. I know you've got it, Mike.
It's totally worth it. Like, however, though, I'm glad I got it for free, because I had an awesome guy over at ProtonCharging.com. Chris Stewart helped me out with this. So thank you, Chris, even years later.
When do I get shit for free? You're always getting shit for free, damn it.
Because I'm on national radio, my friend. But at the same time, this set is really expensive. Like $200. Yeah, I'm not sure how much it is right now, but I know it was an extremely limited edition. But yeah, you could still go out and buy the individual volumes, but it's good just to have them in the firehouse case. Plus, you get a bonus disc, which you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, and Mike, can you give us a rundown of what special features and bonus stuff is on there?
On each volume, there is like on the last disc of each volume, there's like animating the real Ghostbusters, creating the real Ghostbusters, and there's like something on that on every disc, and it's it's like a legacy looking back, talking to people like the producers, story writers, artists, inkers, etc. Just talking about their memories. And they talked to Jay Michael a few times. They talked to Mo a few times. They talked to both of the Janine voice actors. They also have galleries on there for some of the promotional artwork, some of the toys. I haven't gotten quite that far yet, but the bonus disc has all the extended interviews, and all the extended interviews are at least 20 minutes a piece. Jay Michaels is really good to listen to, but also the executive producer and the story editor are really worth kind of listening to as well. And I mean, the reason I was happy about this box set is not just for the cartoon, but the fact I would pay $40 for a 20-minute documentary on a cartoon. And yeah, I really think that's the real strength of this set, is the bonus features. I mean, other than the fact that the cartoons look pretty good, I mean, they're about as clean masters as you can get. I would argue that the Warner Brothers Saturday Morning Cartoon Collection looks almost a little bit better depending on the show, but it's seriously worth it. I mean, the bonus disc alone, just for over 2 hours of extras, totally worth it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So we are going to cut to some ads or some sort of promotional stuff, and we will come back with the outro.
Tooncast will be back after these messages.
Did you know that Justin Bieber's actually Webster in a girl suit? Did you know that Teddy Ruxpin's friend Grubby, actually a tapeworm?
Did you know that Gargamel was really a cat lady?
Did you know that Billy Zane is the only man to ever beat Chuck Norris?
If you didn't know any of these things, then you should be currently listening to Chicken Pop Pod Retro Comedy Podcast. Catch it at chickenpoppod.com.
This is Dr. Wily, and I will destroy Mega Man while listening to Tooncast!
Do not be alarmed. This transmission is being jacked by the lunchroom. We are here to tell you that the lunchroom has been rebooted. It is now a part of the Geekcast Radio Network and is still available at thelunchroom.net. It debuts every Monday or Wednesday or whenever we see fit to give it to you. Any further information can be found at thelunchroom.net. We will now return you to your regular program.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.
Now back to Tooncast.
So guys, final thoughts on the real Ghostbusters. Kevin, you can go first.
You know, it's one of those shows that I definitely remember watching. I definitely remember enjoying. like I said, I think I like the cartoon even better than I like the movie, and I did like the movie. I'm not as, maybe not as big as Mike is on it, because I wouldn't necessarily say it's my favorite cartoon, you know, of the 80s or anything like that, but it definitely was a solid cartoon that I enjoyed watching as a kid. It's unfortunate that they made some of the production decisions that they did. Otherwise, maybe it would have been even better, or been a higher quality for more of the tenure that it was on. But it's definitely worth watching, even if you only watch the first season. It belongs in any top 80s list, that's for sure.
Yeah, what about you, Mike?
I would say, without a doubt, if you're a fan of 1980s animation and nostalgia in general, honestly, if you can find this set at a good price, get it. Even at the $200, it is worth it, especially if you're a huge Ghostbusters fan. I mean, there's just so much from this series that brings back what was good and positive about 1980s animation that it really deserves to be in every collection out there that it can be. And I completely agree with Kevin. It needs to be on more top 80s animation lists. And what can I say? I mean, who are you going to call?
Yes, I agree. And I'm probably going to try to find a way to get this set eventually, hopefully by Christmas time this year. So, Mike, what's coming up for Twig this week?
Well, this week I'm not too sure, because we're broadcasting from the future. I'm pretty sure I'll have some kind of a wacky interview. I mean, as always, if you want daily content, you can go to reviewaday.ca, where I'm likely taking on the shittiest of the shit or the best of the best in the world of video games. But I know I've got I know the Twig topic show for the month of August is going to be Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which comes to us from Edgar Wright of Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead fame. That's being released on August 13th. So we'll be talking about that with Pierce the Punk Dirks, David Double D Dennis, and all the other Pilgrimites on the Twig crew, me among them now, because I'm reading the first 5 volumes before I pick up volume 6. And yeah, that's pretty much coming out. Like I said, we're also going to be at the Toronto Fan Expo, where you can get your very own Mike the Birdman Dog Geek Fight card from DivingDragonGames.com. So trust me, if you have me in your deck, you shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Because he actually has a real laser lightsaber.
That's right, man. You don't fuck with the Birdman, man.
Why don't you tell everybody about that?
What, the bird, the mang-mang, or
no, the lightsaber? The lightsaber.
Oh, yes. There was a company called WickedLasers.com produced something called the Arctic C2 laser. And it is actually, it looks like a lightsaber. And it will actually burn flesh, melt plastic, burn paper, burn wood, and is generally very bad for your health. But I haven't received it in the mail yet. It should be coming this week or early next. Or actually, I should have it by the time this show airs. So it's going to be an interesting piece. I'm definitely going to be bringing that up on the Nerd News Network. And I may talk about it on a few of the other radio outlets across this great land of ours.
You have to do a YouTube video whenever you get it.
Oh, you bet. Trust me, Mr. Potato Head's going to die.
Optimash Prime is going to get killed by a laser.
I think I'm going to kill the Bumblebee one because it looks fucking terrible. And I think, and you know, he's going to be killed by Tony Stark in his experimental Unibeam.
What's going on over at Behind the Voice Actors, Kevin?
Not much. I think there always is a lot of stuff going on, but not much from my end. Voice compares going up every day. The biggest thing that we're working on right now to get added to the site, which should be within the next couple of weeks, if not the next month, is we're going to start adding commercial section to our BehindTheVoiceActors.com, so you can compare the voices of different commercial icons like Captain Crunch or, you know, those types of things. So that's Tony the Tiger and all those fun things. So hopefully within the next month, I'll spearhead that and we'll get that going on the site.
I would like to mention that because this is the real Ghostbusters episode of Tooncast, I looked at the MWire schedule, and coming this Halloween 2010, episode 70 of MWire will be the Ghostbusters film franchise.
I would like to be on that, just saying.
Yes, cool. Thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Join the forums, predaconempire.com/nexus. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. We did receive some iTunes feedback. I think it was somebody praising us. I don't remember, and I'm not going to look it up off the top of my head.
It was positive.
Yes, it was positive. I didn't prepare for that. Sorry, people. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCR and Tooncast. Mine is TFG1 Mike. Mike, what is your Twitter?
Mine is @BirdmanDodd.
And Kevin?
Boss K-Dog.
Become a fan on Facebook. Search GeekCast Radio Network. You can also search for This Week in Geek Show and ReviewAday.ca. We, as of this episode of Tooncast, which I know Kevin C. will be happy about this, the voicemail line is back. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each show. Make sure you tell us your name. 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and wish you'll join us next time when we will be reminiscing on Dennis the Menace. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
Mike Kevin. The Bird... Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Kevin Optimus Solo Thompson.
And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd from ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Thank you for listening. Until next time. I'm so leaving that in.